That's that. I do want to move on, though. I want to get into our news for the night. I want to get into our featured story here, which is about this ceasefire. Yeah, not so fast, everybody. So as you know, last night was supposed to be the annihilation of Iran. Finally, Trump's deadline arrived for his ultimatum. He said that if Iran did not open up the Strait of Hormuz, then Trump would decimate their civilian infrastructure, their power plants, their desalination, bridges and transportation infrastructure. This is something that Trump really didn't want to do, and we'll talk about why that is. We discussed it a little bit last night. But he's bluffing so that Iran will open up the strait. And last night, it looked like we were on. The deadline was in effect, and Trump was really going to do it. He was really going to carry out these massive strikes and annihilate Iran, and that would initiate a sequence of events that would lead to Iran then annihilating the Persian Gulf countries on the Arabian Peninsula and probably cause a global economic meltdown. Iran annihilated, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, the Emirates, Bahrain, Qatar annihilated. And you destroy a significant chunk of the world's energy, maybe up to a fifth. And not to mention this entire region destabilizes, refugee crisis. It's unfathomable what happens in that scenario. And at the last second, all of this was averted and called off because at about 5:30 p.m. Central Time last night, Trump announced that a ceasefire had been reached with Iran. And he announced it on Truth Social. And he said that Iran had agreed to a 2-week ceasefire. This ultimatum, this threat of force, was not canceled, it was postponed. And Trump said that we would resume hostilities in 2 weeks unless a more comprehensive deal was negotiated. But in the meantime, the U.S. would stop bombing Iran as long as Iran opened up the strait to commercial shipping. And this was the announcement. And everybody celebrated. Everybody breathed a sigh of relief because the whole world was not going to be plunged into chaos and darkness. And so it seemed like maybe Trump had achieved some kind of tactical or strategic victory. Everybody felt very good about this. But the first thing that I want to hit tonight about the ceasefire is that it doesn't look like there ever really was an actual agreement. And there's something very strange going on here. I said it on Monday, and I said it, I think, on Tuesday as well. Before you say anything about this war in Iran, you have to make one thing absolutely clear, and you have to understand this. Everything that is being said about this war is a lie. Everything being said by the administration, everything being reported by the press is a lie. And when I say a lie, I don't mean they're getting it wrong. I don't mean we're in the fog of war and we don't know everything. I don't mean they're fudging it. I don't mean it's politically biased. I mean the national security apparatus is manufacturing a calculated deception because that is part of the war effort. The information war, the information space is another domain of the war itself. So just like we engage in outer space and in the air and at sea and on the ground, we also engage in the information space. And everything, literally everything that has been said by the White House, by the Pentagon, and then reported in the press by anonymous sources that are planting these stories, all of these things are a part of an information campaign. And so when you hear the president announce something, you cannot take it at face value. And when you see the reports in the media, you can't take it at face value. And this is no different. So last night, we get the announcement from Trump on Truth Social. And even that announcement, we really, it reeked of uncertainty. We really don't know what's going on. Yesterday, Trump said that we will agree to a 2-week ceasefire if Iran opens up the strait. He said, and this is the agreement which allows us not to bomb Iran back to the Stone Age. But wait a second. If you have a ceasefire, if you have a deal, then why is Trump saying we will stop bombing you if you open up the strait? That doesn't sound like you have an agreement. That doesn't sound like you have confirmation from Iran that they have agreed to the deal. And so that was contained in the very first announcement. And almost immediately after this announcement went out, there was a lot of debate about what this agreement actually entails. And let's talk about some of the details here. So what Washington and Israel believe this deal to be is completely different from what Iran and Pakistan believe the deal is. So last night, Trump makes the announcement, and we get some of the details from the press. And they say that Pakistan is the intermediary. Pakistan is the go-between. The U.S. and Iran do not talk to each other directly. They pass notes to each other indirectly through Pakistan. They say that it was actually China, with the help of Pakistan, that leaned on Iran to get the deal. Now, why might that be the case? Well, China relies on Iran for oil, and all of these countries in Asia rely on the Persian Gulf more broadly for their energy. So if Iran gets bombed back to the Stone Age, and then Iran bombs the other Persian Gulf countries back to the Stone Age, this might significantly hurt China, and it's also going to hurt all the other countries in Asia. China has a very good relationship with Pakistan and is a strategic partner of Iran. So they say that China actually intervened to avert this mutually assured destruction scenario in the Gulf. And they were able to broker a deal, but it was largely through Pakistan. Now, what the U.S. announced, and this is what Washington and Israel believe the deal to be, like I said, is that there is a 2-week pause in the fighting. Now, this is important because what Trump is saying is that the ultimatum still exists. The threat of force is still there. Realistically, this is just another extension of the deadline, of which there have already been four. Trump had a 48-hour deadline, gave a 5-day extension, a 10-day extension, a 24-hour extension. And now Trump is saying that we will pause hostilities for 2 weeks and then they will resume. But there will be a 2-week ceasefire, he said, but that's conditioned upon Iran opening up the strait to commercial shipping. Now, again, there's a technicality here. What Trump said is that Iran has to let shipping resume, but the shipping will go on under the control of Iran. So if a shipping container, for example, or not a shipping container, if a chemical tanker wants to leave the Persian Gulf and go out into the Indian Ocean, they actually have to go to the Iranian military and ask for clearance. And the Iranian military will allow them to do this. They actually have to pay a $2 million toll, and they're going to pay it through Bitcoin or cryptocurrency or through Chinese currency. And so when Trump says Iran must open the strait, there's a very important detail here. Trump is not saying we want the strait back. He's saying Iran effectively controls the strait, and we acknowledge they control the strait. They just have to open it. And that's a pretty big concession. Trump is effectively saying, we recognize Iran's control over the strait and we will allow them to control it and we'll allow them to use their control over it to make money off of it. This is the deal. 2-week pause. We will not attack Iran as long as Iran, retaining control of the strait, allows shipping to resume. What's more, if we want the ceasefire to hold, or if Iran does, we expect that Iran will negotiate with the United States and Pakistan later this week to agree to a more comprehensive peace deal. This is a ceasefire. This is a truce. And in order for it to hold, we want to meet with Iran to negotiate an actual deal. So this is how the U.S. sees the deal. The U.S., through Pakistan, talking to Iran, sees it as a 2-week pause. As long as Iran opens the strait to shipping, as long as there's no restrictions and there's freedom of navigation there, and it's also incumbent on a more comprehensive deal. Now, Israel was not even a party to these negotiations. They were not even involved. They were not at the table. They were shut out of the process. And there's a lot of reporting out of Israel that they were blindsided by this and are very, very angry. They say that Israel is furious. The Israeli opposition against Netanyahu in the Knesset is saying that for Netanyahu, this is a strategic disaster. And they're very unhappy that they were shut out, but they are reluctantly saying that they accept the terms that Trump negotiated. So this is how we see the deal, and this is what was announced last night. But like I said, what happened about 2 hours after the deal was announced is that it came out from Iran that they have a very different version of the deal. Iran came out and said that actually the United States agreed to their 10-point proposal. So the United States did not just agree to stop bombing them for 2 weeks. Iran says we agreed to this huge 10-point plan, which includes, among other things, the U.S. acknowledges their right to enrich uranium, that the U.S. is permanently giving them control over the strait to share revenue between Iran and Oman, that the U.S. has agreed to lift all primary and secondary sanctions, that the U.S. has agreed to withdraw 40,000 troops from the region and close all their military bases. And maybe most importantly, that Israel agrees to a ceasefire with Hezbollah in Lebanon because there is a war raging simultaneously. You have your war in the Gulf where the U.S. and Israel are bombing Iran, and Iran is bombing the Gulf countries and U.S. bases in Israel and shipping in the Strait. But simultaneously, there's a war between Israel and Lebanon. And part of this 10-point plan that Iran says we agreed to as part of the truce is that the ceasefire extends to that other conflict as well. And so Iran came out last night and declared total victory. They said, we got the United States to agree to everything. They agreed to our whole 10-point plan. And then right away, the United States came out and said, no, we did not. The United States came out and the negotiators were furious. And they said, we did not agree that you have a right to enrich uranium. That's not true. And what has now become the biggest sticking point is that ceasefire in Lebanon. And so as of this morning, this has become apparent that this is going to be the sticking point. This is the major impasse and point of contention. The U.S. and Israel are under the impression that it's a simple two-week truce. Again, the three terms are basically they have 2 weeks to find a deal. In the meantime, there won't be any bombing as long as Iran opens a strait. Well, Iran says, no, no, you agreed to stop the war in Lebanon and we can enrich uranium and you're going to pack up all your bases and we get sanctions relief and we get the strait forever. Well, this morning, the U.S. came out and said, no, we didn't agree that you can enrich uranium. That's not true. We also came out today and said, we wiped our ass with your 10-point plan. Carolyn Leavitt, the press secretary, basically said as much. She said President Trump took that 10-point plan and threw it in the garbage. And the bigger issue is that the U.S. and Israel say we never agreed to a ceasefire in Lebanon. Well, Iran and Pakistan have come out today and said, we have explicit terms. You did agree. It's not just Iran. Pakistan, which negotiated the deal, said, yes, you did agree to a ceasefire in Lebanon. So what's going on here? Did the United States agree to that? We don't know. The U.S., Pakistan, and Iran are the parties. Israel was not involved. The U.S. denies that they agreed to this, but Pakistan and Iran are pretty adamant. They're saying, no, no, they're using the word explicit. You explicitly agreed to the terms that the ceasefire extends to Lebanon. Well, Israel wasted no time this morning, and Israel launched one of their most devastating attacks on Lebanon in their ongoing conflict with Hezbollah in over 2 years. Israel went into Lebanon today, and they killed almost 100 people and wounded more than 700 other people. And so Iran saw that, and they immediately shut down the deal. That happened this morning, and Iran said, you agreed to a ceasefire in Lebanon. This is now a blatant violation of the agreement. So Iran has now closed the strait. They shut the whole thing down. There were four cargo ships that went through the strait with Iran's permission. Then they shut it down before noon. And what's more, Iran's parliamentary speaker came out and said, not only is the strait closed, but the deal is off. They said, because you blatantly violated the deal, there is no basis for us to even have a ceasefire. And what's more, there's no basis for bilateral negotiations. In other words, the negotiations on Friday are off, according to the parliamentary speaker. So what it looks like where we're sitting right now is that this whole thing has totally fallen apart. It looks like there's no deal. But there's a lot of strangeness here because, like I said, what this actual deal ever consisted of, we are not even really sure. Pakistan and Iran say it was far more widespread and far-reaching. The United States denies this. We don't really know who to believe because, again, there's so much deception. And Trump is telling us one thing on Truth Social and misrepresenting the truth and exaggerating. And Iran is always denying these things and asserting a pretty consistent line. So we don't really know what the original deal was. And now here's something strange. We don't really know what the state of the deal is because Iranian media is telling us, the Iranian state media is saying the Strait of Hormuz is closed. All of the tracking websites that actually use satellite and other information to monitor shipping in the Strait, they all say that there are no ships going through the Strait. They say that four cargo ships went through in the morning and then the strait was shut down and a ship tried to go through but was turned back. So Iranian state TV says the strait is closed. All of these shipping trackers say the strait is closed. And the Iranian parliamentary speaker said the deal is off, the strait is closed, and the whole deal is off and we're not going to talk anymore. Well, today the White House denied this. In the White House press pool this afternoon, Carolyn Leavitt was explicitly asked, who controls the strait right now? She wouldn't say. Well, it's clear that Iran controls it. They do effectively control it. And on Truth Social last night, Trump effectively conceded that. Trump said they will charge money and they will use that to rebuild their country. So he's effectively admitting, yes, they control the strait and they'll use that control to charge money and then they'll collect that money and they'll use it to rebuild. Well, today at the press pool, Carolyn Leavitt said, I'm not going to tell you who owns the strait. She refused to answer the question. And what's more, she was asked, is the strait closed? Is the deal still on? And she said the strait is open, but Iran needs to reopen it. Okay, well, the strait is closed. Like I said, Iran's parliamentary speaker, their state media says it's closed and it's closed. And so they say to the Trump government, is it closed? They say, no, it's wide open. And yet Iran must immediately reopen the strait. Okay, so it's not open. You know it's not open, but you're saying it is, but also you want them to reopen it. What's more, the parliamentary speaker says the deal's off. Well, the White House says the deal is still on. The White House says the deal is still on, and we're going to meet on Friday in Pakistan. And what's even weirder is that nobody in American media is reporting on this. If you read the New York Times, if you read the Wall Street Journal, if you read the Washington Post, they are all, read the headlines right now. It's like scary. Because again, the strait is closed. There's no shipping going through. But if you read any of the major papers in America, they're all saying, well, it's a little shaky. They're all lying. All the papers are lying and they're all saying the deal is on. It's a little shaky. It's a little turbulent right now, but Trump is pressing ahead. And you say, what the fuck is going on? The government is lying. The press is lying. We have this information. We have the internet. The strait is not open. The deal is off. What Iran is saying is that they're done unless there's something that we don't know about. Now, this is the summary of this. This is from the New York Times. It says, quote, at 6:32 p.m. last night, Mr. Trump announced on Truth Social that he had agreed to suspend the bombing campaign in Iran for 2 weeks to work out a peace agreement. Disagreements over the scope of the deal emerged almost immediately. At 7:50 p.m., Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif of Pakistan announced a ceasefire agreement and said it applied everywhere, including Lebanon. But on Wednesday morning, today, the president told a PBS reporter that he viewed the conflict between Israel and Hezbollah, backed by Iran, as a separate skirmish. This morning, Israel launched its heaviest bombardment of Lebanon in more than a month of war with Hezbollah. Carolyn Leavitt, the White House press secretary, announced that Vice President Vance, along with Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, would travel to Pakistan to hold talks with the Iranians. But shortly after Ms. Leavitt's announcement, top Iranian officials accused the United States of violating the agreement. Mr. Ghalibaf, the Speaker of Parliament in Iran, who is expected to attend the meeting in Pakistan, wrote in a statement that the truce and negotiations with the United States were, quote, unreasonable because Israel was attacking Lebanon, a hostile drone entered Iran's airspace, and the United States continued to oppose Iranian nuclear enrichment. Now, again, what they don't mention, even in this article, is that this parliamentary speaker went further and said there is no basis for bilateral talks or a ceasefire because you violated the deal. Why was that omitted? So as it stands right now, it looks like we have no ceasefire. And the sticking point is the war in Lebanon. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. So, of course, the U.S. went about the ceasefire alone. We went in with Pakistan and Pakistan talking to Iran, and we came up with this agreement to stop the war, which, of course, Israel did not want to happen. Israel, as well as the Gulf countries like Saudi Arabia and the UAE and the others, they want the war to go on longer. Why? Because they're not happy with the results. They want Iran to be completely annihilated before the United States is allowed to leave. They want us to destroy more of their missiles, more of their drones, more of their military. They want us maybe even to invade and to open up the strait by force before they will let us be done with this. That's the Saudis, that's the Emiratis, that's the Israelis. So when Trump went into these negotiations, you're starting to see the fragmentation of this coalition. We're starting to realize that we want very different things than the Gulf and Israel. For the United States, it is okay if Iran controls the strait as long as the oil flows. And we want the war to end expeditiously because we want oil prices to recover because we have the midterms coming up. And by we, I mean the administration. But the Gulf countries and Israel, they need the strait open and they want their regime change and they want the war to go on longer. And they're okay tolerating the economic pain because in the long term, they need this threat dealt with. So Trump goes into the room with Pakistan and he comes out with this 2-week deal. Israel's furious. The Gulf countries are furious. About an hour after the deal is announced and Trump averts his biblical strike on Iran, Pakistan comes out and says, yeah, so about that ceasefire, it includes Lebanon too. Well, that's Israel's war. Iran, that's the U.S. and Israel's war, but Lebanon, that's Israel's war. And Israel has been adamant that even after Iran ends, Lebanon will continue. What's more, Israel says we are going to escalate in Lebanon. Once the war in Iran ends or pauses, Israel is planning on escalating. They want to do way more in Lebanon, and they're going to wait until the war in Iran is over. So that is not a part of their program. A ceasefire in Lebanon, it's the opposite of what they want. The way they see it, winding down the war in Iran lets them escalate in Lebanon. So now Pakistan says the only way to get a ceasefire in the Gulf and open up shipping in Hormuz is if Israel stops the war in Lebanon. Think about the drama that this creates. The U.S. needs to open up the strait to save our economy. But Israel still wants the war to go on against Iran, and they view this as their war in Lebanon to secure their northern border. So they're having to swallow an end to the war in Iran, which they don't want. And they're having to shelve their other priorities, their other conflict with Lebanon. Well, now they're really not happy. And Israel is refusing to play ball. Israel says, we didn't agree to that. And you can't make us. We're going to bomb Lebanon harder than we have in the past month because we don't agree to this at all. And now that is putting the ceasefire in jeopardy, which means the strait remains closed. So you can work this out like a mathematical function. Israel bombing Lebanon, which is something they must do, is now directly causing the Strait of Hormuz to be closed. And that is causing the U.S. economy to tank. So you can literally create a through line and say Israel's ambitions in Lebanon is wrecking the U.S. economy. As long as Israel is bombing Lebanon, Iran will not agree to a ceasefire. As long as they don't agree to a ceasefire, the strait is closed. As long as the strait is closed, our economy is in peril. Now, Israel doesn't care. They want the war to go on, and they want their war in Lebanon. It's a win-win for them. If they get to sabotage the peace deal and go to war in Lebanon to do it, well, they're doubly happy. Great. The U.S. is stuck in the war with Iran, and we get our war in Lebanon. Well, now we're super pissed because we're saying we can't get Israel to stop, and now our ceasefire is scuttled, and we look like a joke because we just called off the strikes for the ceasefire. So this puts the U.S. in a position where we have to pressure Israel to stop bombing Lebanon to get the strait open. And now we are put in the position where we have to do Iran's dirty work. Hezbollah is Iran's ally. Now, think of this. Think of this. We got into the war to topple Iran's government. Didn't happen, not gonna happen. We got into the war to destroy Iran's missiles and drones. Didn't happen, not gonna happen. Over the course of the war, Iran took the strait. Now the war is about opening up the strait. So it's about trying to get something that we already had. Forget about regime change, forget about the missiles. It ain't happening. We're lucky if we get the status quo from before the war back. Well, now, after the ceasefire to open up the strait, now Iran is demanding that we shut down Israel and Lebanon. So now the new peace agreement is like, Iran gets everything that they want. You want a ceasefire? Well, we are still here, so that's just not even on the table. There's no regime change. And we still have our missiles, and nuclear is not even in the talks. What we're going to talk about is how much we're going to control the strait and when Israel is making peace with our number one proxy, Hezbollah. Talk about five-dimensional chess. We went from a negotiation last year about whether Iran could have a nuclear program. Now the negotiation is how much of the strait did they get to control and how much does Israel get to bomb Lebanon, if at all? And we're doing it for them. You see how they're using the strait to drive us? We had to leave this conflict without achieving any of our objectives. And now that we've left the conflict, in order to stay out of it, which we desperately need to, we have to go to Israel and beg them to stop bombing Iran's proxy. It's genius. And I imagine maybe this was Iran's plan, a little bait and switch, or a poison pill. Maybe Iran knew that by saying Lebanon is part of the ceasefire, they had to know that Israel's never giving that up. Israel wasn't happy to begin with. Now we're going to beg them to stop their other war, which is their own. They had to know they weren't going to do it. They weren't going to go along with that. And they had to know that if Israel continues bombing Lebanon, that gives Iran the pretext to close the strait, and they don't have to take credit for it. Iran can say, look, you violated the deal. Now we're not going to hold up our end of the bargain. And they get to blame Israel, which fractures the coalition. Now you've got Israel and the Gulf on one side and the U.S. on the other. Israel wants to prosecute their war in Lebanon. The Gulf is happy to see the war in Iran continue. And the U.S. has to now compel both of them to stop on Iran's behalf, because we need the strait open more than anything and more than anyone. That's where we find ourselves right now. And so again, in these very early stages, that is what it looks like the four-dimensional plan is to put the squeeze now on the United States to bring to the fore those differences in strategic objectives between the Gulf, Israel, and the U.S., which previously were all united and which now all have a very different idea of how this is all going to come to an end. So where it is right now, we do not have a deal. There is no ceasefire, and the Strait of Hormuz is closed. I'll read you, this is another article about the Strait. This is from the Wall Street Journal. It says, quote, "No oil or gas tankers have traversed the Strait since the ceasefire was struck on Tuesday, according to data provided to the New York Times by Kipler, a global ship tracking firm. Four bulk carriers, vessels that carry dry cargo, did make it through. Iranian state media said on Wednesday afternoon that the strait was fully closed and that some tankers had been turned away. That report came after semi-official outlets reported that traffic in the strait had again been halted, this time in response to a deadly wave of Israeli attacks on Lebanon. Since those reports, no vessels have appeared to cross the strait. The most recent vessel to cross the waterway was tracked in the middle of the strait around 10:45 a.m. Eastern Time today on Wednesday. Iran's official broadcaster has said that because of mines, vessels must coordinate with Iranian Navy and use designated routes to cross the waterway. After the ceasefire was announced on Tuesday, Iran's foreign minister said safe passage through the strait would be possible only if coordinated with the military and with consideration of technical limitations. The White House Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt added to the confusion, briefing reporters on Wednesday. She said that news reports that the strait had been closed were false, and then she called for it to be reopened immediately. And she would not answer repeated questions about who currently controlled the waterway. So again, you think about who has won in the war. And I said this on Twitter, and it was very controversial. It went viral, and all the pro-Trump plan trusters were debating this. But think about the negotiations last year with Iran, or this year with Iran. When we sat down at the negotiating table with Iran, we were demanding limitations on their nuclear program. The Strait of Hormuz was open, and oil and gas was flowing freely, and Iran did not control it. They didn't control it. They weren't charging money for it. It was open, and it was free. And we were negotiating with Iran about what limitations they would accept on their nuclear program. We go to war with Iran to topple their regime, destroy their missiles, destroy their centrifuges, get their highly enriched uranium, destroy their proxy network. These were the things we were seeking. And now at the end of the war, what do the negotiations consist in? Well, now it's all about the strait. Now it's all about whether the strait will be opened, under what conditions, will Iran control it? So just from strictly being very objective, from a negotiating point of view, if you enter the negotiation and the talks are about what are you going to give us, but then you leave the negotiation and we're trying to get what we had before back, you have obviously lost. Again, we achieved none of the objectives. Make no mistake about it. We went out there to topple the regime, failed. We went out to destroy their missiles, failed. We went out ultimately to prevent them from acquiring a nuclear weapon, failed, because they're not giving up any of their centrifuges or highly enriched uranium. And now the only thing that we're getting from this deal is that they will allow shipping to go through the strait, which they now control and are getting money from, and we acknowledge. They're up. They're up. And now that's the negotiation. That is how you know we lost. How much money did we spend? $40 billion? They say it's about, what was it, about $1 billion a day? So about $40 billion, maybe more in cost. Hundreds of wounded Americans, a dozen dead. Our bases in the Middle East are destroyed. About 15 U.S. military bases, inoperable, fundamentally damaged and destroyed. Tons of aircraft losses. And we didn't get anything. And now Iran has the Strait of Hormuz. Now let's talk about where this is going. The reason that I did not believe a ceasefire was possible is because when you think about what Iran is actually saying, What they have said repeatedly is we do not want a short-term truce. We don't want a ceasefire, contrasted against a deal. What's the difference? Well, a truce, a ceasefire, anything short-term like that. Another way to say it is it's a reprieve. It's a timeout. Why will Iran not agree to a ceasefire, a truce, short-term agreement, whatever? Because if Iran gives us 2 weeks, a month, 45 days, a few months, all that is a timeout for us to adjust to the attritional war that we are now in. We went into this war with the understanding that it would be a decisive, lightning war. We were going to hit Iran with everything we had, hard and quickly. Their government would crumble and it would be over. Didn't happen. And then Iran closed the Strait of Hormuz, and that made it an attritional war. And it's attritional and economic in a couple of ways. One, the Strait of Hormuz is closed. We can't open it. So as long as the war is going on, oil prices go up and up and up. And this puts pressure on everybody and everything. And it really hurts us during the midterms. And it really hurts us with our AI-driven economy. And it really hurts us with our stagflation challenges. So they're really hitting us where it hurts. And now it becomes a war of timing and economics for that reason. It's an energy war. But it's also a war of attrition because of the projectiles being used. Iran has this huge stockpile of missiles and drones. We don't know exactly how big it is. And in order for us to intercept those missiles and prevent a lot of damage from being done to the Gulf countries and their energy and civilian infrastructure, we need two interceptors for every one drone and ballistic missile. And those interceptors are in very short supply. They're in high demand. They cost a lot of money, and we don't make enough of them. So that's another aspect of it. The war can't go on long because it's going to destroy our economy. And eventually, these drones and missiles are just going to be raining down on Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Kuwait City, Riyadh, all these cities in the Gulf. And we're going to have to pick and choose which ones we shoot down. So in a word, the United States needs to adjust to this new reality. We got trapped, we sprung the trap, and now we're stuck. The difference is that Iran prepared for exactly this kind of war. They prepared for this. This is what they wanted. They wanted it to be an attritional war. And those were the capabilities they had up their sleeve. They have their drones. They have their missiles. They have built cities underground that make drones and missiles. And they have decentralized the chain of command. They have dispersed the missile and drone launch sites throughout the country. They've made decoys. They're hidden and they're everywhere. And they knew they were going to make this move to close the strait. This was their strategy. We walked right into the trap and they were prepared for this. We killed their leaders. They were ready. Their bench is 7 guys deep. So you can kill guy number one, you can kill his successor, the successor's successor, the third guy, the fourth guy. They prepared for that. We bombed their Navy. They prepared for that too. They got tons of speedboats and midget submarines. We thought we were going to bomb their missile launch platforms. They have more of them than we could ever destroy, and they're hidden and mobile, and they're making more of them. They were ready. We were not. They knew what we were going to throw at them. They survived it, and then they were prepared to put the screws in us and make it hurt. So who is now begging for the ceasefire? Us. Why? We need a timeout so that we can pivot. We need a 2-week, 45-day reprieve so that we can change how we're fighting the war. We can adjust our force posture. We can do what we need to do with the energy market. We could get a little bit of breathing room with some oil going through the strait. It helps us, but it helps us to get ready to fight a different and longer war with Iran. So this is why Iran is not going to let us get away with this. They're winning. We're hurting. They're winning. Trump is humiliated. He's begging them for a ceasefire. And we're basically telling Iran, hey, I know we just tried to kill and destroy you. Can we get a 15-minute breather so we can collect ourselves here? Yeah, hang on. Time out. It didn't work. We tried to kill all of you, but it's not working. Can we get a timeout so we can fix our economy and get ready to keep the war going? obviously they're not going to go for that. So what Iran is saying is, look, we're going to impose as much pain, we're going to inflict as much pain as possible, and we are not letting you go. We're going to keep you bleeding, and we're going to make it hurt so bad that you beg for mercy, and then what we want is guarantees that this will never happen again. We want assurances that you're never going to try to destroy us and kill our supreme leader and topple our government. We're not going to give you 3 months, 6 months, a year to get ready to fight the next war, because the U.S. is going to build back better than they can. The U.S. will build back very quickly because our country didn't get bombed 15,000 times. Theirs did. So we will find it very easy to find the supplies and do the planning and configure the next military operation. They're going to be slow to recover from this. So Iran figures, while we have the leverage, we need some assurances, we need some guarantees that this will not start all over again. We want peace. And so that's why I never thought that there would be a ceasefire. I never thought they would actually agree. Now, what's more, the United States is not quite ready to give Iran what they're asking for, because the United States still has all these conditions. We want Iran to give up enrichment, and we want Iran to give up their missiles, and we want them to give up the strait, and so on and so forth. And so for Iran to make peace with us, they want a deal. But for there to be a deal, the U.S. is going to have to come off of all of our red lines on nuclear, on missiles, and even now on the strait, which we're not willing to do. So I saw last night, Trump said, oh, we have this big ceasefire. I said that Iran's not going for this, and the U.S. is not doing what is necessary for Iran to go for this. So what will happen, I think, in the next couple of weeks and on a long enough timeline is that Iran is going to play this tactfully. They do want an end to the fighting, and they don't want to lose the prospect of a deal, but they're not going to settle. They're not going to settle for anything less than some serious guarantees, because their entire strategy right now is they need to make this hurt as bad as possible for as long as possible so that it is unthinkable that we will ever try this again. And that is what they're looking for. And then once that happens, think of it, they make it hurt so badly, at some point there is going to be a truce. At some point there's going to be a ceasefire. Iran will know that the United States still wants something from them, still wants restrictions on enrichment, still wants restrictions on missiles. But Iran is not going to have to listen to the United States, because for the U.S. to get those things, we're going to have to go back to war. And if we go back to war, Iran is going to close the strait. And if Iran closes the strait a second time, which they now control it, then it's going to be even worse. And I'll tell you why that is. Because right now, everybody in the market is pricing in whether this war will end or whether it will go on. And what's more, investors in the Gulf, when they're making their decisions about real estate or these data centers or American companies or banking services, when ultra high net worth individuals are considering moving to Dubai or Qatar or Saudi Arabia, they're watching this war and they're hoping it will end so they could pick up their lives. But if in 6 months the U.S. is making demands against Iran and then we attack them because we want to compel them to give us what we want, and Iran starts launching drones at Saudi Arabia again and closes the strait, well, now all these investors in these different markets, they're going to look at that and say, oh, so this is fucked. Like, the Strait of Hormuz is just closed for business now. This is a recurring thing. This is a thing now. Iran closing the strait is just a feature of the Middle East. We can't rely on this oil and natural gas and helium and aluminum and all these fertilizer, all these things that come from the strait. We have to price in their significant risk here. And the same goes for the Emirates. The same goes for Qatar. The same goes for Saudi. All these people that populate these markets are going to say, oh, so this is just life in the Gulf now. You have a luxury condominium in Abu Dhabi and you have drones hitting the hotels and the airport and the shopping malls. You're going to say, I don't want to live here. I want to go and live in Singapore. I want to go and live in wherever, in Ho Chi Minh City. I want to go and live in Japan. I don't want to live in a city where the international airport's getting hit with drones. They too will price in the risk. They will leave. The businesses will leave. And the engine of growth in these cities, which is tourism, real estate, banking services, all these other things, that's all going to go away too. So it becomes doubly unacceptable. That's the deterrent. And that's why the Strait of Hormuz is critical to everything. If Iran seizes control over the Strait and they take it, and if, as time goes on, the Strait of Hormuz, those main shipping lanes are closed because they're covered with mines, and the only shipping lanes to get through are regulated by the IRGC, and the new normal is that shipping has to get approval from the IRGC and pay money to them, and Iran controls it. This is Iran's nuclear option. This is their red button. So if the United States is thinking, we're going to get a ceasefire and then we'll come back another day, this isn't over. We'll get you again. If you don't give up your enrichment, eventually we're going to get you. Well, how are we going to do that? You have the lesson of history, the pain from this war, and then you have Iran's option that they can always close the strait again and make it happen all over again. That is the state of the play right here. And so I think this is going to put a lot of urgency on the U.S., Israel, and the Gulf because they know this. And so, look, we tried the ceasefire, didn't work. Tried the ceasefire, it fell apart. I don't know exactly how it's going to play out, but I think there's going to be a lot of urgency now on the part of Israel, the U.S., and the Gulf to fix it now because they know that if the longer the war goes on, the more pressure there's going to be to bring it to an end. And if the war ends, again, the new normal prevails, and that gives Iran the checkmate move over us. The deterrence is heavily established and entrenched, and we don't get another go at it. We don't get a do-over here. So I think that is where everything is headed. Now, the other thing is we have these negotiations apparently on Friday. I don't know if they're even still on, but they say that on Friday, Iran and the U.S. will meet directly in Pakistan to negotiate. Now, the parliamentary speaker of Iran is supposed to be there. He says it's off. But again, we don't know. The U.S. is saying that Iran is more conciliatory in private. Maybe that's true. On the U.S. side, J.D. Vance is leading the delegation. And I'll just say very quickly, and then we'll get on into the super chats, I told you this was going to be their move. And by they, I mean all of these pro-J.D. Vance people, they all recognize the war is a catastrophe. It's a disaster. J.D. Vance will be hanged by this war in the primary next year. And so their big idea was, how do we save J.D. Vance from culpability for the war? Well, we have to give him responsibility for the peace. We have to appoint him as the lead negotiator. He'll take all the credit for the peace deal. And so when he's on the stage in 2027 and 28, and they say, JD, the war in Iran was a disaster. Why did you not tell Trump it was a bad idea? Blah, blah. He can say, well, look, Dana, or whoever the person's name is. Is it Dana Perina still at Fox News? Jake Tapper, I was the vice president and my job was to execute the orders of the president of the United States. It's his administration, blah, blah. But then I went to Pakistan and then I brokered the deal and blah. That's going to be the line. And I saved everybody. I saved the day and I shook his hand and I held up the trophy or whatever. I took the photo in front of the thing. That's going to be the line. And they've been doing this for like 5 weeks. I told you they were going to do this. They started this whisper campaign in the media. They said, oh, J.D. Vance is going to lead the negotiations. Oh, the Iranians say they'll talk with him. Oh, Trump says if you don't talk to Vance, you're not going to talk. There's been this whisper campaign for 5 weeks. They want him at the front of it because they want him to get the credit so that he isn't blamed, so that we can make this mistake all over again. And I told you that was going to be their move. Joe Kent, David Sachs, Peter Thiel, Tucker, Elon, I'm sure, is involved. And they wanted to spare J.D. Vance from going down with the ship. They didn't want him to be burned because he was a part of the administration that gave us the Iran war debacle, or debacle, kerfluffle, as Candace would say. And now here it is. But do not be fooled. J.D. Vance was in favor of this all along the way. He said it in 2024. He said it in 2026. He was not there to dissent against the war. So I'm not going to buy it when he's there standing in front and giving the handshake for the peace agreement. Mark my words, if Vance takes credit for the deal, you know that Tucker's going to commend him for it. There was a show that Tucker did a few weeks ago. Tucker said that J.D. Vance should lead the negotiations. He said, because only a man with Vance's moral rectitude. He literally said, J.D. Vance's moral rectitude. I think that was the word he used. It was either that or something like that. J.D. Vance is the only one with the moral character to negotiate an end to the war. Yeah, make it more obvious that you guys are all in a fucking group chat. Tucker, who's interviewing Kent, who resigned from the admin to Vance. Tucker says on his show, I think the only negotiator is Vance because he's the only morally upright person who can do it. And then Vance is going to do it and Tucker's going to glaze. It's going to be mythical. The love bombing, the glazing, it's going to be absolutely mythical. And I'm telling you right now, do not fall for it. Vance is in on this.